following commentary does not necessarily reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or the Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to Boston Neighborhood Network, 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 02119. To arrange a time for your own commentary, you can call WBCA at 617-708-3215 or email radio@bnnmedia.org.
Good evening and welcome to Talk of the Neighborhoods. I'm Joe Heisler, your host, coming to you from the BNN Live Studios in Eggleston Square, where tonight on the Boston Neighbor Network, we're also being simulcast on our sister radio station, WBCA 102.9 FM. Tonight, all politics, as is our usual wont, and tonight in two parts. First up tonight, yes, of course, it's an election year, a presidential election year as well. But most of the nominees have been determined already. Not all, especially here locally. And in particular, there's a county race that's drawing a lot of interest. That's the race for the clerk of the Supreme Judicial Court, Suffolk County. And tonight, one of the candidates, Allison Cartwright, joins us. And then on the second half, we switch gears a bit. Joining us, an old friend, longtime political strategist, and BNN analyst, Joyce Faribault, joins us. And we'll talk about all the races on the ballot this fall and some of the local developments here in Boston. All that and more tonight on Talk of the Neighborhoods. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, we're back with Talk of the Neighborhoods. I'm Joe Heiser, your host. Tonight, a two-part show, and in this first half, we'll focus on perhaps the one primary election race that's on the ballot this September that is drawing the most interest here locally in Boston. Then we're talking about the race for the Suffolk County Supreme Judicial Clerk position. It's a county job a six-year job, I believe that's right, 6 years, and it's drawing so far a couple of candidates and maybe more, but I'm pleased to have joining me tonight one of those first out of the gate, so to speak. She's a public defender and attorney, obviously, and she's making her first run for public office. I want to welcome Allison Cartwright. Allison, nice to have you here. Thanks so much for joining
us. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me,
Joe. Oh, yes, no problem. Nice to have you here. Well, obviously, you know, your first time running, you're getting to know a lot of people, but tell our viewers that may not be familiar with you, tell them a little bit about yourself, who you are. Who is Allison Cartwright?
Well, Allison Cartwright is, believe it or not, I've been practicing law for almost 32 years.
Wow.
All here in the Commonwealth. I began my legal career in 1992 with the Public Defender's Office. It's called the Committee for Public Counsel Services, CPCS. Right. And after that, I did work briefly as Assistant Corporation Counsel for the City of Boston. And then I had my own law practice for quite some time. And then I came back to the Public Defender's Office to head the Roxbury Defenders, which has been around for over 52 years. We recently celebrated the 50th anniversary of the Roxbury Defenders, founded by former Chief Justice Roderick Ireland, who's one of the founders. Yeah. He was at that celebration, as was former Justice Geraldine Hines, who now sits on my committee, the committee to elect Allison S. Cartwright. And then I became a managing director at CPCS. So I'm responsible for overseeing several of our offices in Suffolk and Norfolk County.
Wow.
But that's the professional side of me, but I'm also a mother. I have a 15-year-old son, and I live with my son and my mother.
Wow. Where, in
Hyde Park.
There you go. I'm dying to ask you, what brought you back? You said that you went into private practice for a while, and then you decided to come back to head the Roxbury Defenders office. What drew you back? What is it about that kind of work that made it important and exciting for you?
Yes, well, while I had my private practice, I was what's called a bar advocate. So I was still taking court-appointed cases and representing poor people. Mm-hmm. So I never strayed from that. But I came back because the position to head the Roxbury Defenders opened up, and that had been one of my dreams, to come back to Roxbury Defenders and to actually be in charge, to take that baton and take that organization. Mm-hmm. It's a part of CPCS, don't get me wrong, but it's a special part.
Yep.
And to be able to lead the helm with that was just something I had dreamed of doing. And so I was able to accomplish that. That's why I came back.
And why now then, given that, what made you decide to jump into this race? Countywide position, big purview, an important job in the court system, and what drew you to it?
Well, what drew me, when I learned that Maura Doyle, our current clerk of the SJC, was not going to run for re-election, and she had held the position for almost 28 years, and she had really elevated that clerk's office. Mm-hmm. So when that became open, it was an opportunity for me to now take my legal skills and to take it to another level. And the SJC is our state's highest court. So it's an incredible honor to just be able to have this opportunity to go and to work in that clerk's office and to be the clerk. It's a special thing.
I explain to people, because I'm sure this will come up in the course of the campaign, because a lot of people trying to understand how it is that this is a countywide elected position is at the helm of the Supreme Judicial Court, and what exactly is involved in the job.
Well, first of all, I think the reason that it's countywide and that it's an elected position is so that there is some accountability. Mm-hmm. If people have any complaints, concerns, suggestions, they have to come through the clerk. They really can't go directly to a Supreme Judicial Court justice.
Right. Yeah.
Correct. So that's important. And this job entails one of the most fun parts of the job is swearing in new attorneys. Mm-hmm. So I would see myself as an ambassador, because I am an attorney. I know what those folks have gone through to get to that point. I know what the gruel and rigor of law school. Mm-hmm. I know that. I've done that. And then to sit for the bar exam and to pass it is quite an accomplishment, because you're tested in over 24 subject areas in law. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge accomplishment, not only for the new bar admittee, but for their family, their friends, their support networks. So that's one of the fun parts, is you get to do that. But the not so fun part is when attorneys mess up,
right,
and they have to be disciplined. Yeah. And when the Board of Bar Overseers conducts their investigation and does their hearing and makes a recommendation to the Supreme Judicial Court, it has to go through the clerk's office. So, and then once they make their decision, it's the clerk who has to announce that decision.
So you're a bit of a, you would be a bit of the policeman to, and maybe that's an overstatement, but don't get me wrong, but you have to potentially discipline.
Yes.
How do you feel about that being, that prospect being the fact that you've served so long as a public defender that you might have to, well, at least scold some of your...
Well, they won't go to jail or prison. Yeah. It's a very noble profession, mm-hmm. and we do have rules that we must follow, and
right.
we have
professional
ethics.
Standards, ethics.
Yeah. Yes, and if someone violates those, then there's a price to pay for that, yeah. and it's not. It may be something as well. I don't want to say it's anything small when you're disciplined. There are varying levels of discipline.
Right, career threatening, potentially.
Yeah, yeah, up to and including yeah. disbarment.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, that does happen. And if it's my job to announce those decisions, that's what I do. Mm-hmm. Another important component to that office is running what we call the single justice session. Now, that's a session where if attorneys are in the middle, or litigants, are in the middle of, let's say, a trial, and they have a legal issue, and a judge, the sitting judge, has ruled against them, and they want to file an immediate appeal to the SJC, it has to come through the clerk's office. So the clerk has to be able to discern whether or not that petition meets the requirements. That clerk has to assemble the file, the docket, mm-hmm. and present it to the single justice in a clear, orderly fashion, so that the justice can only has to focus mm-hmm. on what's before him or her in order to make a decision. And that's something that, as clerk, I can do that job. I don't have to leave it entirely to staff and rely on a staff of attorneys, because leadership comes from the top. And if you're, and if you're an attorney, you're going to know what's required. Mm-hmm. and how to make sure that, you know, the judges get that. And those are cases that are really quite serious. They could involve, if they're criminal, they involve a liberty interest.
How often does that happen? I'm just curious. I don't know if you know, but.
It can happen fairly often.
Yeah.
Yes, when you're in trials, they also hear bail appeals that can go as high as to the SJC. Mm-hmm. And in civil cases, they can involve billions of dollars. So it's a critical function, and we just don't want to make mistakes at that high a level. And that's our state's highest court.
And so a lot of responsibility. Do you have to be an attorney to do this job? You feel like you're qualified to do the job.
Absolutely.
But must you be an attorney to do that job?
No, you don't have to be an attorney. Yeah. You just have to be, I suppose, 18 years of age. I don't know that it has any specific qualifications, even like a high school diploma.
Yeah.
However, being that this is, again, you know, I keep stressing this, but it is our state's highest court.
Yeah.
And those are the most brilliant legal minds we have, sitting on the most serious cases that affect everybody mm-hmm. in one way or another.
So it certainly requires a degree of professionalism, perhaps a high degree, and
yes,
I think that'd be fair to say.
Absolutely, a very high degree of professionalism, ability to manage, and I do have management skills. In my current position, I oversee anywhere from 70 to 80, so I would say about 75 staff. That includes attorneys, social service advocates, investigators, administrative assistants, interns, mm-hmm. you name it. If anyone is working in any of our public defender division offices in Suffolk or Norfolk County, I supervise them.
So given the responsibility, did you have to think long and hard about whether this is something you wanted to do? Because, of course, governing or managing, that type of thing is one thing, but running for office is a whole other thing. And
it really is. But
how did you come to decide that you wanted to run for this position, for the job,
yes,
campaign for the job?
Okay, I really wanted to have this position, and this is the only way to get it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were surprised that it wasn't an appointed position.
Right. Well, I was going to say, a lot of these end up as somebody resigns, and the governor, or I'm not sure who'd be responsible for appointing these positions, but are appointed, as several county officials have been.
Right, but this position, so this was the only way to get the position. So I decided, yes, I'm going to do what it takes. And when opportunities present themselves and the timing was right, I'm the right person for this mm-hmm. job, I'm very qualified for this job, I said, yes, mm-hmm. I'm going to have to campaign then.
Now you say you have a 15-year-old son?
Yes.
What did he say when you said...
Well, he was kind of, I had to explain to him, what the job would be. And I had to explain to him what campaigning would mean, in our lives. Yeah. I'm a solo parent. I'm an adoptive mother. Mm-hmm. So it was just the two of us for the longest until my mother came to live with us mm-hmm. a year ago. And I just had to tell him, this is our government in action. You're learning these things in school. You have a mom who's showing you, I'm living it. And I think he's definitely starting to understand now because, mm-hmm. My time is spent, I have my day job and then I'm campaigning before work and after work.
I was going to say.
So he sees the hard work.
Mom won't be there to tutor him as well, right?
Right. But luckily, my sister is a teacher at the Boston Latin School,
wow.
So she's actually helping out quite a bit, yes.
Well, it's usually a family affair when you run for office. It's not an easy thing to do, and so I give you a lot of credit for stepping up, because especially in this kind of day and age where, so much divisiveness and criticism, most of it almost entirely unfairly, including, and we're seeing quite a bit of it now in some New York courtrooms not just judges but clerks, children, whomever are being criticized and in some cases threatened. And so it's not an easy thing to do, so I give you a lot of credit. So
Thank you. So
how do you win this race? Tell me.
How's
it going so far?
I'm happy to announce that I am the first in this race to get the 1,000 signatures certified.
There you go.
That's
what
Secretary
you need, 1,000?
I need 1,000.
Yeah.
And that happened today, so you are the first to get this.
We're breaking news
breaking
right here.
News. Yeah. So I'm going to be grassroots. I'm going to be, as they say in sports, 10 toes down. I'm out there. I'm doing it. It's important that people get to know me because I don't have wide name recognition. Mm-hmm. I have name recognition within my legal circles. Mm-hmm. And within some of the communities here, particularly Roxbury and Dorchester. But it's important because this includes not only Boston, but Chelsea, Winthrop, Revere.
The county, yeah.
And I am in all of those spaces, and I'm getting my name out there. I'm explaining to people what this job is, mm-hmm. and again, why I'm more than qualified to hold this position.
Well, it certainly sounds like it. Now, at least so far, and I don't know if she's, apparently she hasn't quite fulfilled the requirements yet for getting on the ballot, but you at least at a minimum be facing an at-large Boston City Council who has been elected citywide.
Yes.
Is that kind of daunting? Does that create an impediment and make it tougher? How are you...
I don't see it that way.
Yeah.
She's not the incumbent, so I don't have hurdle to overcome, and it's a different position. She's not running for the city council. She's running for clerk of the Supreme Judicial Court, and that's a whole different arena, entirely different. And the Supreme Judicial Court, there's a lot of reverence in that courtroom. There's a lot of courtroom decorum that one must adhere to when you're before the court and when you're working for the court. And again, those are the things that I know, and I'm very comfortable in those settings. So I'm not in any way daunted by that. No, I you know, this is our democratic process, and I'm more than happy to have competition.
And so how are you doing? You're raising money, you're getting endorsements. What do you see as the key to, you know, winning? It'll be, in all likelihood, although we don't know, there could be locals, state reps, state senate races within the city, although I've not heard of many at this point, but likely to be a low turnout primary. None of the congressmen so far have opponents. None of the Senator Warren appears like she will not have a serious opponent. Does that how does that affect your strategy?
Well, we're working very hard to get out the vote. So we will be in the neighborhoods. We will be canvassing, knocking on doors, encouraging people to even do early mail-in voting, and especially because this is on primaries on September 3rd, the day after Labor Day.
Yes,
a lot of people
add
will
that
probably,
to the formula, right?
So a lot of people will be, you know, probably on vacation, and the last thing they want to think about is an election. But it's my job to get the news to them that this is important. This is a critical job, and it's a job that you get to serve for 6 years. Right. So we really want people to get out and vote and you know, have their voices heard, and this is the way to do it. So we'll be out there.
What, in your mind, is the most challenging aspect of this whole process? I mean, as a matter of fact, I'm sure you thought long and hard about this before you threw your name out there, but what's the most challenging part for you, Allison, as somebody who's, well, you're not afraid of the limelight, but you've never been kind of cast in that light either, you know?
No, other than, like, you know, trying cases and being in front of a jury and having to have the focus on you in that way. I'm excited to do this. I enjoy going out, meeting people, talking to different folks in the neighborhoods and what concerns they have. And sometimes, even if it doesn't necessarily pertain to this job that I'm trying to get, it's still a good idea to know what motivates people, what they're interested in, what their concerns are. Because as the clerk, I'm the conduit between, you know, the people, the litigants, and the SJC. So I will have the ear of, you know, the Supreme Judicial Court, the justice is there. So that will mean something.
Right. Well, and you're used to, of course, defending clients. And now, in some ways, while you are the liaison to the court, you're not quite, it's not like you've become a prosecutor, but you're also no longer be defending the rights of clients. How are you feeling about that? Because that's something you've been working so long and hard on.
Well, I look at it like this. As a public defender, yes, I make sure that, you know, my clients' rights are being upheld. And as a clerk, it's still important to make sure that, you know, the laws and constitutional rights are still being protected, even coming through that process. But this is, make no doubt about it, it's an apolitical position. I can't promise favors to anybody. I can promise them fairness and equity, like I said. And it's not really a job for a politician, although you must politic to get the job.
The delicious irony of it. Well, I don't know about delicious, but certainly sounds like you've prepared for it, prepared yourself for it. It's likely to be, of course, you're campaigning over the summer, a long, hot campaign, as you say, the Tuesday after Labor Day, so it'll be a very interesting. I want to wish you the best of luck, and I want to thank you so much for coming in and talking with us. And, I'm hoping there might be an opportunity coming up, maybe over the summer, where we could have you back. And more than willing to do so.
I would love that. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Nice to have you here.
My pleasure.
All right. Allison Cartwright, she is running for the Supreme Judicial Court clerkship. That's in Suffolk County. That includes all of the city of Boston and Chelsea, Winthrop, and Revere. This is a primary campaign, and the winner, in all likelihood, is the candidate that is elected in the September 3rd primary, Democratic primary election. When we come back with more of Talking to the Neighbors, well, we'll talk about what might be on the ballot for that election and more about what will be on the ballot in the fall election. Joining us, a longtime friend of mine, a political strategist and a BNN analyst, Joyce Faribault joins us when we come back. Stay tuned.
I know that many of you helped make my new home possible. I want you to know how much that means to me and to all of us who gets to lay our hands here at night.
Words of appreciation from longtime tenant Beverly Gilbert at the new Two Life Communities building in Brighton. And she was not alone, as elected officials and community members rejoiced at the opening of J.J. Carroll House.
These 142 adaptive and gorgeous apartments will provide more opportunities for Miss Beverly and for others in this community to have safe, affordable housing that permits them to live in dignity. What better goal for our nation than to make certain that's there for everyone?
Everyone deserves more than shelter. Everyone deserves to have a home. Housing is health. Housing is dignity. Housing is community. Housing is peace of mind. And it is the very least that we can do. Housing is our most important infrastructure. It is fundamental to everything. For people in the dawn of their lives, the prime of their lives, the twilight of their lives, it is everything.
Two Life Communities more than doubled available apartments in the new building, creating accessible, energy-efficient units with universal design. Tenants can find connection and purpose through dynamic common spaces like the salon, resident-run resale shops, a library, and more. Seniors and those with disabilities can enjoy a space that adapts to their changes. An on-site PACE center allows seniors with advanced healthcare needs to stay close to home.
Community is the idea that I can knock on my neighbor's door at any time and I can get help. Last week, I wasn't feeling well. My neighbor across the way rang me at night to say, how you doing? Do you need anything? And I just feel like this sense of we're all here trying to help each other, and many other people don't have access to such, a marvelous sense of community.
At the BHA, we think it's so important for our elderly residents not just to have housing, but to have housing with dignity and to be able to access services and have, break out of social isolation and have the support that they need in their later years. And that's what's so amazing about this building around me is it's just got incredible services and facilities for everybody who's aging in place. And the apartments are designed so that as you go through the different stages of aging, you can continue to be anchored here in the community.
The new J.J. Carroll House proves finding solutions.
I know from my parents' eyes that even when they had lived in this country for decades, there was still that little feeling of, am I really recognized as an American? And we are doing everything in the city of Boston so that you belong.
Citizenship Day is the annual day that we host for the last 9 years to do big scale processing of naturalization applications for people who are eligible to become citizens.
This year we helped at least 400 permanent residents to complete their citizenship application. There's over 250 volunteers that are helping make this possible. Everything from people that are helping them complete the application to folks helping guide traffic, and then a large group of attorney volunteers that are helping do a quality control check for the citizenship applications as well.
I think it's really important that everyone gets the same opportunities and access to legal counsel to make that dream possible.
It's so great to see that there are a lot of like-minded individuals who just want to give back and support and help others, recognizing the privilege that we have and just using that to give back.
As a native Spanish speaker, I thought it was important for me to volunteer.
Muchas veces las personas, cuando encuentran una persona que habla su mismo idioma, se sienten más confiados, pueden hacer más preguntas, obtener mejores respuestas en su propio idioma.
Today is a wonderful day. The idea of becoming a citizen is so beautiful. The reason why we live is because of family. If I have part of my family here and part out in Africa, it doesn't make us whole. If I become a citizen, I could bring my other children and let the family live together.
I have a long time living here, 18 years now. It's a nice opportunity to now become an American citizen.
Yo les aconsejo a todas las personas que ya pueden ser ciudadanos que se acerquen acá, que es una facilidad y que le ayudan a uno.
To be here with representatives speaking all languages to help make sure that you are ready, having help filling out that form, and then getting a double and triple checked by lawyers who are there to cheer you on, it makes all the difference in the world. And you see here, little kids who are with their parents, they're gonna do big things for the city of Boston. And we are so excited and so grateful that so many people have come together to help make this happen. I know from my parents' eyes that even when they had lived in this country for decades, there was still that little feeling of, am I really recognized as an American? And we are doing everything in the city of Boston so that you belong.
Citizenship Day is the annual day that we host for the last 9 years to do big scale processing of naturalization applications for people who are eligible to become citizens.
This year we helped at least 400 permanent residents to complete their citizenship application. There's over 250 volunteers that are helping make this possible. Everything from people that are helping them complete the application to folks helping guide traffic, and then a large group of attorney volunteers that are helping do a quality control check for the citizenship applications as well.
I think it's really important that everyone gets the same opportunities and access to legal counsel to make that dream possible.
It's so great to see that there are a lot of like-minded individuals who just want to give back and support and help others, recognizing the privilege that we have and just using that to give back.
As a native Spanish speaker, I thought it was important for me to volunteer.
Muchas veces las personas, cuando encuentran una persona que habla su mismo idioma, se sienten más confiados, pueden hacer más preguntas, obtener mejores respuestas en su propio idioma.
Today is a wonderful day. The idea of becoming a citizen is so beautiful. The reason why we live is because of family. If I have part of my family here and part out in Africa, it doesn't make us whole. If I become a citizen, I could bring my other children and let the family live together.
I have a long time living here, 18 years now. It's a nice opportunity to now become American citizen.
Yo les aconsejo a todas las personas que ya pueden ser ciudadanos que se acerquen acá, que es una facilidad y que le ayudan a uno.
To be here with representatives speaking all languages to help make sure that you are ready, having help filling out that form, and then getting a double and triple checked by lawyers who are there to cheer you on, it makes all the difference in the world. And you see here, little kids who are with their parents, they're gonna do big things in the city of Boston. And we are so excited and so grateful that so many people have come together to help make this happen.
All right, we're back with more of Talk in the Neighborhoods. Tonight also being simulcast on our sister radio station, WBCA 102.9 FM. And very pleased to have joining us in the second half an old friend, a political strategist, BNN analyst for many of our election shows, and community activist as well, of course. Joyce Faribault joins us. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Here,
Thank
as
you,
always,
Joe.
Nice
always,
to see
yes.
you here. Well, lots to talk about, but let's just briefly touch on local elections. Just had Allison Cartwright here. It looks like that's shaping up to be a very, very interesting race for a somewhat obscure position, or at least in many voters' minds. I'm sure they didn't realize that the clerk of the Supreme Judicial Court is elected countywide. But Allison running, she's a longtime public defender, head of Roxbury Defenders, against a at-large city councilor, Aaron Murphy, who is just reelected citywide, almost topped the ticket, coming in second. What do you think of that race, or have you? What's the scuttlebutt on the street? Have you heard much about it?
Well, I'm thrilled that Allison is running because she has a legal background. I don't know whether Mara Dolan, she was an attorney.
Doyle.
Doyle. Whether she had, I think you have to have a little bit of legal, background in this. And, Erin's, she's a good city councilor. She nearly topped the ticket. But Ruth C., who is a friend of Allison's, beat her and became the council, president. I think she's good where she is, and I hope she stays there. Yeah. And with Allison in the race, that will probably ensure it. I don't know anybody who's not going to work for her. This is a woman who's, as you said in introducing her, has been a public defender, well known, very competent, and sort of in the genre of what this position's all about.
It'll be interesting. It's certainly, in all likelihood, an extremely low turnout primary.
Sure.
Of course, Liz Warren, there's no apparent primary opponent for her. Could be a couple of Republicans running, but usually that's a
down
whole
the
other
line.
Thing. And but not many local races that we're hearing about.
No.
So it could be a very interesting race. Lots of times in races like that, with a low turnout, that's the super voters have even more of an effect, more important.
The name recognition.
And name recognition oftentimes is a factor, so it should be interesting to see. Other than that, not much on the ballot. But I also want to talk about, of course, the 800-pound gorilla in everybody's room, which is Donald Trump and the what all but certain rematch between he and President Biden. There's been some talk, though, in the poll numbers, and they're just polls or just snapshots at this point. While Biden is highly likely to win in Massachusetts, that's not true in the rest of the country. And in fact, some of the bellwether states, the frontline states,
the polling is showing Trump in the lead. And at least if you listen to the pundits, they're saying that perhaps President Biden's Achilles heel is not people voting for Trump, it's people not voting. And at least in some surveys, one of those groups that appears to keep showing up is young black men who are not apparently so thrilled with Biden. What's going on? What do you think is the key behind it? Not to focus solely on that, but
Well, I don't know if I believe it.
Yeah.
I'm going to say what Charlemagne, what Biden said to Charlemagne the God when he ran the first time. He said, if you're black, you're not, you can't be voting for Trump. I don't see anything in the second go around where Trump is a symbol. Maybe in the little chicken and waffle place where he bought everybody, the other day, one woman said, don't pay any attention. I just can't see that. I do feel frustration in different places I go and I see. People are, kind of frustrated with, the fact about the whole school stipends, mm-hmm. and that not working out.
Right, the loan repayments.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
Especially for low-income black folks. But he's working on it. It's just that they need to get the word out. And, one of the key people who, too, are Elizabeth Warren and Ayanna Pressley, and millions have been taken off of the school loan rolls, but there's so much more to go, and people are very disappointed by that in this community, that's for sure.
And we know some children that have student loans.
you too? Yes, I do.
I do too.
But
I don't know if it's a factor of age, of course. Biden would be the oldest person ever elected president, and Trump is not far behind him in terms of age. But young people in general, what do you think? There seems to be, kind of an apathy, or maybe apathy isn't the right word. Maybe they're discouraged. If the turnout is down, it would seem to favor Trump.
Let's face it, it's just not an exciting race. Yeah. I mean, we've seen that, done
right.
that,
yeah.
The age factor, it's kind of what you do with what you have. And I think that, Biden has done a good job. The problem is he hasn't gotten the word out about that. His messaging is, maybe toward the end he gets better, but he needs to get the messaging out. Now, somebody who is really tearing up the footprint is the VP. I'm surprised. She's doing a hell of a job. I mean, she's, taking the abortion fight around the states. She's speaking out, She used to speak out, used to say, what she going to say? But she's saying the right things. Now, I think also that, the president has kind of made a couple of missteps in terms of how he's dealing with Israel. And now he's seeing that what he should have done in the beginning, he's got to do now because it's horrible circumstances, especially the recent giving weapons to them when you see the carnage, babies, that kind of thing. I think those are the kinds of things that you can certainly support Israel as I do, but you have to make sure, especially when you're dealing with Netanyahu. He's like the Trump of Israel.
Yeah.
I still think I'd give the edge to Biden. I think people are disappointed. in communities of color. I hear it and see it. I think that Trump may get some of the Hispanic vote because there's always been that move to do that. But, you know, him putting himself in the place of, or saying he's like Mandela, you know, seeing
that might be
passing Bibles around. I mean, this guy is so crazed. And from day one, you already know what he said he's going to do.
Yes.
All right. So I think that.
What do you think is the biggest disappointment, though, that people have with Biden? Is it something in particular that you can kind of put your finger on? Or because I hear that too, and you know, and so you think maybe that will, at the end of the day, of course, maybe people will come back around, don't get me wrong, or will it somehow undercut the turnout, the enthusiasm, and you know?
I think what it's going to boil down to is, and this might seem superficial to people, but the fight for democracy. Do you want democracy? I mean, this is the Trump, or you, do you want to allow Trump to come back and, you know, talk about the heroes of January 6th? What heroes? Yeah. Okay. And when people, you know, really focus on what they have to lose, I think that the edge will go, and I'm sorry to say it like that, because it's only going to be an edge either way, but I think it's going to
be close.
An edge of Biden.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, it's going to be very interesting, and as the summer comes on and we hear more, and of course the national conventions this summer, very interesting. Of course, the other part, the final piece that could be the spoiler is RFK Jr.
Are you kidding? Are you kidding?
No, I'm not. That's what I think a lot of people are afraid of. Yeah.
Well, I don't. You mean
or hopeful?
Maybe he takes the edge. Yeah, I don't know. I think that he's run an awful campaign so far, and I think that what is it? Jill Stein is in there,
right.
And so is. What's the brother's name? Cornel West.
Right, Cornel.
I think.
Princeton.
Yeah, I think that. I don't know. They're very weak. I think they'll, you know, put some stuff in the game for sure, but I don't think it's going to amount to much. Wrong Kennedy, the wrong Kennedy who's running.
Well, there you go. Maybe. again, Joyce Faribault is here on the second half talking. Politics, as is our usual want, and tonight following up on some of the races coming up this fall. Also some interesting local issues, community issues I want to talk to you a little bit about, because you always seem to have your ear to the ground. Help us understand what this is about the Benjamin, because I know there was a big meeting and some people getting up and testifying, yourself included, I believe. What is that about? Because I think people are trying to understand what's at play there.
Well, the Benjamin Healthcare Center up in, you know, Mission Hill,
right.
Roxbury line has been there for almost 100 years. It was bequeathed by a lawyer to the community that long ago. And
well, that's considered Lower Roxbury, I think, isn't it?
Lower Roxbury, Mission Hill.
Yeah.
It's up on the hill, you know.
Yeah.
So I have to give it to the elected officials led by Senator Liz Miranda, new city councilor Ben Weber, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, and the community. I've never seen the community come out in such force. And I'm not just talking about the community who love that nursing home, mm-hmm. and who many of the employees who've worked without pay, but even the clients. You know, one woman, a blind woman, testified that, you know, the gentleman who was running the place, he's the one that needed to go, not them. because he had decided that there was no way that they could possibly stay open. And if there's any worse time to close a nursing home, and many have closed around in the hospitals and the steward situation, but this community fought. And, you know, I want to also, you know, mention Senator Dianne Wilkerson, who saved them before.
Right.
These, I said at the gathering of about 200 people, does anybody know any organization here who gets the kind of money that they need to stay afloat? Name one.
No.
There's none. But the Black community and communities of color make do with what, you know, they have, just like the CAS Center with the immigrant population.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I you know, there's
the state recreation.
And these are our people,
right.
But the facility is for our kids. So, you know, I mean, we do what we can with what we have, and that's for sure. So the Benjamin, everybody was said, oh, it's going to close down, and the guy's taking all this money and so forth and so on. And like I said, the elected officials stood in lockstep, and so did everyone else. And the court decided that they were going to give them a receiver, and they gave him Joe Feaster. And I called Joe Feaster Mr. Fix-It Man.
Oh, yeah.
Because Joe, not just, you know, people say, oh, Roxbury Comprehensive. Well, you know, he came late to the game on that, but he tried as best as he could. The Boston Housing Authority, you know, you
he's
can go on and on. He has a lot of roles, and if anybody can fix it, he can, and that's what he wants to do. And, you know, like I said, this is a facility that has never gotten the kind of money, but they have ranked very high in terms of the service.
So you're hopeful that can stay open?
I'm hopeful, yes.
What about, not so such good news on Walgreens, of course, that pulled out or wanted to pull out of the community and did close their pharmacy, I believe.
Well, many pharmacies, straight through the Black community, and straight through the Black community in a number of states. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, you know, you wonder how that is happening. That they start with the poorest community, the community that needs it the most. You know, there were some people who were talking about class action suits against them in different states. But, you know, with the business decisions, you know, they have business decisions, and that sometimes, you know, kind of supersedes.
Well, it'd be interesting to see if there's some repercussions from that. You know, I think that certainly Walgreens' reputation has taken a hit as a result of that.
Yes, they have.
We've got just a minute or two left.
Sure.
I've got to ask you about the position that Rachel Rollins ended up landed, I should say, at the Roxbury Community College. Of course, she was forced to step down as a U.S. attorney, was, of course, originally elected as a Suffolk County District Attorney, and a lot of people disappointed what happened with her, a real rising star, I think, for a lot of people. But RCC came in for some criticism for hiring her in a non-legal position.
Well, let me just say this. I think as a, you know, as a group of people, we tend to throw the baby out with the bathwater. This woman, this job is about helping re-entering individuals.
Right, and the criminal justice system.
Absolutely. Yeah. And whatever happened before, and I'm not saying whether I felt like it was, you know, big, it doesn't take away from the fact that this is a brilliant woman who started a movement among other AGs and others.
Prosecutors.
And prosecutors. Yeah. And frankly, she's perfect for that job.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect. And the Bay State Banner, I have to give them credit, they said so. And they broke it down why she would be excellent in that position. So good luck, Rachel.
Well, lots of news percolating and
in the neighborhoods.
Yeah, and we'll have more in the weeks and months to come. I want to thank Joyce Faribault for coming in and joining
us
tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
As always, I love having you
here.
Thank you. You're watching Talking the Neighborhood here on the Boston Neighborhood Network. We're here tonight and every Thursday night at the same time. We'll be back next week. And
the preceding commentary does not necessarily reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or the Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to Boston Neighborhood Network, 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 02119. To arrange a time for your own commentary, you can call WBCA at 617-708-3215 or email radio@bnnmedia.org.